Okay, it's Bruce Rouse here from Carbonetics, and climate change is one of the key challenges of our age. We don't get too many good news stories about how we are reducing carbon emissions. And today it's my pleasure to be introducing and interviewing Stuart King, Senior Manager of the Latitude Mobile Products, Dell Australia New Zealand, to learn about how Dell is reducing its energy use and carbon footprint, and how it's working with its customers to do so, and to learn about where its products might be progressing with respect to energy use. Thank you, Stuart. Very nice to be talking to you today.
Pleasure to be here, Bruce. Thanks for your time.
Yeah. Just really quickly, an overview of Dell's approach to its carbon emissions, because I heard you present in Melbourne, and it was really quite exciting. So just a quick overview before we start talking about some of the technology.
Certainly. Dell is a major producer of IT equipment globally. Obviously recognises that we have a responsibility to, you know, climate and everything else, just like every other corporate citizen does on the planet these days. So Dell has, from the top down, Michael Dell has made a statement that, you know, by the end of calendar year 2008, Dell as a 80,000-seat organisation, producer and manufacturer of PC equipment, as well as several offices around the world, will run as a carbon neutral entity. And we achieved that by August last year. So we came in, you know, a good 4 months ahead of the goal that we set ourselves to do so.
That's tremendous. So you've got a carbon neutral goal which you've achieved as an organisation. Do you have a vision of a carbon neutral computer?
Yes, of course. I mean, I think that's the end state, and there is a number of ways that we can get to carbon neutrality, I think, and to continue to reduce footprint. But if you take a look at the energy consumption, even if we look at a PC that's just 3 years old, which is not really that long ago, but in PC terms, it may be considered, you know, prehistoric. But if you look at even on a commercial perspective, a three-year-old PC running for 8 hours a day just in a normal office, and let's just say you swap that three-year-old machine for a current model machine, you'd be looking from a commercial point of view at saving around about the $70 per seat per year in just that electricity consumption alone. And of course, you know, with the cost, and that's typically what gets businesses excited that, hey, there are cost savings to be had. The other, and we'll say almost unintended benefit, I guess, is that the actual energy consumption itself has reduced, carbon footprint has reduced of the actual entity itself. And this is obviously going to play pretty strongly as carbon trading and things are on the agenda and get moved in from a regulatory standpoint as we move towards our Kyoto protocol.
So that's basically talking about three years ago a PC with a CRT monitor going to a LCD and a more efficient computer, is that correct?
Correct. And Intel has been great because they've been able to continually reduce their transistor size. And not getting too technical on this call, the smaller the transistors, the more you can fit on a core, on a processor. And the smaller the gaps are and the smaller the wastage of electricity is between the transistors. So what tends to happen there is you get a far more powerful CPU in terms of, you know, what it can actually produce, but for far less energy consumption and wastage through the, you know, wasted electricity. So, you know, we're getting to a point now where, you know, processors are less about how many gigahertz they are and more about how many cores they are, simply because, you know, we can shrink the die to such an extent that provides such an amazing amount of power for such a small energy footprint.
And of course, the demand for computing power, certainly in offices, probably hasn't grown at quite the same rate as the processors' power has increased, I guess. So that perhaps creates opportunities to deliver a little bit more power to users, computing power that is, but with a lot less energy used. Is that correct?
That's correct. And I mean, I guess if you look at some of the groundbreaking stuff that Intel is bringing out, They showcased a processor, oh goodness me, I think it was 6 to 8 months ago, that was 80 cores. And those 80 cores were no bigger than someone's thumbnail. So I think that's kind of giving, and although that there are some tolerances and things like that, that this was a prototype, I think what that shows people is in the not-too-distant future, we're going to have enormous amounts of compute power for a very small draw of electricity consumption. And that's going to get really, really important. See, if you kind of break down the world's current CO2 emissions, I think you would have seen this figure before, Bruce, that 2% of the CO2 emissions comes from the ICT industry. And that's all of the computers and all of the servers and all of the telephones and, all of the switches and all those kinds of things that are in the industry. Now, if you break that 2% down, and let's equate that to another industry, which is your airline industry, so it's about the same. So the airline industry equates to about 2% of the emissions today. Breaking down that 2%, you'll see that actually around about 40% of that number is actually made up of desktops and notebooks, and not the servers and storage infrastructure that most folks think is the biggest drawer of electricity. Now, it's funny because I think it's just a perception thing. When you walk past a server room or a storage room or a NOC or whatever you'd like to call it, you can physically hear the power. It's humming. There's hundreds of servers and hundreds of hard drives and hundreds of fans and air conditioning, all that kind of stuff going. And folks can readily accept that within those four walls of the server room, that there is an enormous amount of energy, both in CPU output and energy drain on the grid. Now, the 40% of the untouched, if you like, is really the desktops and notebooks. People forget about them simply because they're sitting on desks, and there might be only 50 that you can see on one floor, but if you have 10 floors of computers, and then you've got a couple of other buildings around, very rapidly those numbers add up. And typically what we find with a lot of customers is that folks simply just leave their machines on when they go home. And I guess it's like a quote in Gaul, I guess when you go to the office in the morning, you leave your TV on and you leave your toaster on and you leave your heater on, because it's really the same level of absent-mindedness, if you like, that that folks need to drive a change.
And that's one way you can get big savings with virtually very little cost, isn't it, by getting people to switch off their computers out of hours. I think...
Correct.
Yeah. There's a statistic that we actually sometimes use with our customers, that you're leaving a computer on all the time, like a PC with a monitor, is like the greenhouse emissions are equivalent of driving your car from Melbourne to Perth and back again over a year. So it's a lot of energy when you think of it that way.
It certainly is, and it's honestly, Bruce, it's energy wasted. It's not doing anything. The machines aren't in production. They're not delivering anything. I mean, and let's face it, a computer is a machine, right? It's like a car, or it's a bulldozer, or whatever. It's a tool of trade. If it's not being used, turn it off. Now there are obviously some levels of complexity around turning machines off, particularly around things like security patches, updates, and things like that. But once again, there's technologies, and Intel's been great with their vPro technology, bringing that capability back for full remote management to allow that machines that can be turned off and then turned back on over the middle of the night, they can be patched and security updated and all that kind of things without causing any interruption to the user, and then switched off again. So the user comes in the next morning, their machine's all ready to go, and it's only been up, woken up overnight to do its normal maintenance without interfering with the user's day-to-day work.
That's a new Intel processor, is it, Stuart?
Well, vPro is it's an architecture more than anything else. And if you're familiar with the vPro naming conventions, vPro is an ingredient brand, so you need a processor, you need a specific chipset, you need a specific management technology, and the like, and all these things go together, and the brand is called vPro. As mentioned, it's simply a remote management tool, or an out-of-bands management tool, which allows a desktop administrator, and I guess we're talking about large corporations, where a desktop administrator can grab control of the machine remotely. So he doesn't actually have to go to the physical machine to wake it up or to turn it on, for example. And when the vPro was added into, you know, a large corporate domain, the administrator has the ability to grab control of the machines, even though Windows isn't running. So it's a machine-level, hardware-level management tool.
Oh, great. So that's good for then time shut down and, like you said, putting on the patches and that, and wake on land and shutting the computer down again.
Correct. And I guess the challenge with wake on land has and always has been in the corporate sector is that a wake on land packet is a what they call a broadcast packet. It's not a targeted packet, and a lot of switches and routers and network gear will actually strip that that packet out, so it never actually reaches its intended recipient. So the wake on land typically doesn't work in the large corporate sector. So Intel has come up with a far more secure way of waking up these machines and manage them. It's far more than just waking them up. For example, you can re-image remotely. So that's another good story. You know, let's just say you have a remote office, one in Melbourne, one in Sydney, for example. You don't have any IT folks in Sydney, and a machine is broken. The IT guy could be based in Melbourne. He can grab control of the machine, you know, when he's sitting in Melbourne, restart the machine and rebuild it, you know, kind of remotely. That then saves him getting on a plane and flying up to do the repairs, which a lot of large corporations do as well. So I think there's a lot of downstream effects that, you know, are, shall we say, unintended good guys out of this architecture, and it just allows a lot more remote management capability.
So if you're specifying new computers for, you know, a fairly large environment, this is the one to specify in terms of the processor.
I would consider it a no-brainer, and so do a lot of our customers.
Yes, yes. So one thing we have been recommending a lot to our customers is laptops, and I understand that you that's your area, or notebook computers.
Indeed.
I use a notebook. Pretty well everyone I think we've only got in our office of 12 people, we've only got one desktop, all the rest are notebooks.
I like those odds.
Because, you know, the reason is both for the mobile computing, but because they use less power. Where are notebooks headed in terms of power consumption? Are we going to have a zero-power notebook sometime in the near future, which is powered by solar panels, for example, inbuilt onto the actual notebook?
Now, Bruce, I wish I'd brought my crystal ball with me. We're always looking at more efficient ways to power notebook computers. Now, the lithium-ion batteries honestly haven't changed in their technology, you know, in all reality for the last 10 or 12 years. We've had minor tweaks that we're able to get out of that technology. And, of course, the power supplies themselves are incredibly efficient, just by the very nature of the requirement, because you need to run on battery for long periods of time when you're mobile. So, you know, Dell is focusing on, you know, the ways that they can maximize the battery life on their notebooks, and, you know, things, you know, simple technologies, you know, like changing all of our screens over to LEDs, for example, LED backlit screens, rather than the older CCSL. That's got a double-edged goodness, one that you get far brighter screens for a far smaller energy consumption. So, you know, you brighter screens for less battery consumption, that's great. And the second good guy is it removes all the mercury from the machines. So all the heavy metals and things like that that were associated with the CCSL architecture are now gone. And, you know, a lot of all of our corporate range have greater than 10% of recycled materials. It's far higher than that in reality, but obviously for legal reasons we'll keep it at, you know, the minimum, if you'd like. And we use metal mag alloy, if you'd like, in all of our bodies of our corporate notebooks, simply because at the end of its life cycle, you know, whenever that might be, 5 years, 10 years down the track, you can melt down a metal and then you can turn it into something else, you know, whatever it might be, a golf club or whatever it might be. And it kind of closes the loop on the, you know, landfill, reduction of landfill at the end of life. Now, specific to you know, things like solar power and, you know, the hydrogen cell and things like that that come into notebooks, I think there's always the double-edged requirement that these are almost commodity products at the moment, and although there is architecture and there is stuff out there at the moment that is looking towards, you know, solar panels and, you know, the hydrogen kind of, you know, cells and things like that, it would be about a $50,000 to $60,000 notebook if we were to include that architecture today, and in reality, the market's not ready for it. Suffice to say that we're always looking at ways to deliver the appropriate technology to our customers at the appropriate, you know, price point.
And in the notebook market, are the advances in processors also enabling you to reduce, you know, I really don't know, how much power in a notebook goes into the processor and how much goes into the screen and the rest of it, you know? Should we be looking more for advances in screen technology than processor technology? Where are we at now with respect to where you're going to get the biggest, you know, the 80-20 rule, you focus your efforts on where 80% of the energy consumption is?
In terms of energy consumption in a notebook, vast majority of it goes on the actual LCD or LED screens, and that's really the lighting of it and the running of it. Although having said that, it is a close, you know, race between that and the processor and chipset. What we are seeing, though, is, you know, a rapid reduction in both the screen energy consumption and the CPU and motherboard consumption. You know, and I guess it's the same story with desktops. You know, we're at 45 nanometer architecture today. Come March next year, we'll be seeing 32 nanometer architecture from Intel, and then they've got line of sight to 22 nanometer. Now, you know, I make a joke here. I don't really know what a nanometer is. I know that it's 10 to the minus 9, which is a lot of zeros, very, very small. And I guess, you know, the benefit of Intel being able to continually shrink their architecture means, you know, generation after generation, the power consumption is, you know, almost cut by a third. So, you know, we've just got a really good story that we're following down on the motherboard and processor state, and LED was a step change as well. And I guess around the chassis, if we're thinking beyond just power consumption, I think power consumption is important based on, you know, that's what's going to help customers while they have computers in their stewardship for 3 years or however long that they keep them for. But what's important is really the actual chassis themselves. And I mentioned before, you know, we use a very large percentage of recycled componentry in our machines. And, you know, I think we can use a throwaway line that says for every, Optiplex desktop that folks buy, you're saving two drink bottles, you know, the plastic water bottles from a landfill. And that's where we're going to be starting to see a closed loop. And as, you know, those technologies become more efficient to recycle these, you know, post-consumer recycling, you know, these plastics that we're addicted to as a race, we're going to start seeing far more efficient use of these in terms of integration into new products.
Yeah, I've noticed with notebooks as well, just talking about the power consumption, that, for example, 5 or 6 years ago, I was measuring notebooks at 40 watts, yeah? I'm now measuring them at 20 watts, so that's a halving in 5 or 6 years, which is fantastic. You know, so potentially, maybe in 5 years, we're going to have a 5-watt computer, laptop. Have you got any comments or ideas on that, or Stuart?
It's one of these crystal ball questions again, Bruce. Absolutely. It is, you know, tied to, you know, the architecture really around the screen, LCD technology and the motherboard architecture. Now, the motherboard architecture, you know, as I say, does have line of sight currently to a 22 nanometer architecture. That's over the next 5 years, which should see, you know, the processing power consumption be slashed by a further third off where we are today. It remains to be seen, and I guess we'll be looking at architectures like OLED screens, which have a good power consumption story, as well as being, you know, more organic and environmentally friendly architecture to be used as well on notebooks. But I think your question around, you know, when are we going to see a sustainable notebook is probably the right question. in terms of when will it be self-powered, self-sufficient. And I think that's the architecture that that every IT organisation is working on today. And of course, the lower the draw of the notebook, the lower the amount of self-sustainability, if that makes sense. So it's a double-edged movement. Where we'll reduce the power consumption, and then we can start on with a modest power generating device.
Yes, and also hopefully then the issue becomes the embodied energy in the actual computer, and then you start to look at recycling and the materials used, it's really exciting actually how this technology is developing so rapidly, because we deal a lot with buildings, and buildings have got a life of 100 years. And once it's built, if you've got the wrong glazing or stuff like that, it's very hard to fix, very expensive. And I guess that's the advantage with computers, is they get turned over so quickly, and the technology is developing so quickly that globally we can see tremendous power reduction happening over the next few years. Is that your view, Stuart?
I think definitely. We as a species have to do something. We've had a lot of wake-up calls, and we're in a state of flux or change, where the stuff that has gone on for thousands of years with our environment and stuff that we've taken for granted, we can no longer take for granted. There's a lot of, speaking broadly, environmental, issues. We're looking about Hurricane Katrina, of course, was a big one that I think folks stood up, and I think Al Gore said it. What was so disturbing about Hurricane Katrina was we've never seen this before. So is it an act of God, or is it an act of us as humans? Did we cause this? And if we caused this, my word, we better do something to stop it. So I think we've got a lot of folks' attention. And if you can do these things, and they're simple, simple to achieve, simply by turning over your older computers and then turning them off at night. Goodness me, that's a huge amount of savings we can have without anybody really having to lift a finger. Let's just be wise about what it is we're doing.
Yeah. So we've got the trend in the monitors with the organic LEDs that you're talking about. That's the OLEDs. Is that correct?
That's certainly an architecture that we're looking at. Yep. And of course, we aim to be the greenest IT company on the planet, and that's what we're working to achieve. You said, carbon neutrality is one step that Todd will take you through in a subsequent discussion, and we've achieved that, and we're getting direct feedback from customers who, they want to be green, but they don't know what to do. A lot of customers just don't know what to do, so we break it down, simply letting people know that, hey, you can switch your PCs off at night. That's going to, save you a whole bunch of wasted energy. You can move from, CRT screens, if you've still got them, to LCD. That's going to save you a whole bunch of energy consumption as well. And then you can look at other smarter technologies, which are typically for more advanced customers, like virtualization technologies, thin and flexible computing and things like that, where it takes a bunch of the power consumption off the desk and puts it in the data center where it really belongs and can be managed.
Yeah, can we talk a little bit about thin computing, thin clients? Because can you just briefly explain what it is first?
Yeah? Sure. So I guess thin client, when I say that, everybody's going to have their own perception. Thin client used to be, green screen terminals, very low compute, very low functioning end user computing, if you'd like, that might do just a simple task like word processing. Everyone will be happy to note that thin computing has moved a long way since those days. Dell's approach, or Dell's terminology, just to kind of bring it into simplicity, we call it flexible computing. So it's essentially a low power draw device that will run an Intel Atom processor or Intel Atom architecture, so it's called a nettop. The entire box itself is what we call a 25-watt, so it's got a 25-watt power supply in it, which means the draw is significantly less than that, so it's around about the 15-watt draw. And it can be used in a number of different ways. So you can stream a desktop to these machines, for example. You can basically have these machines with no hard drive in them at all. So a customer, when they start up the machine boots off the network and goes and gets its C drive, for want of a better description, off the server. A lot of benefits there around, you know, the locus of control for an IT administrator. When the user is done for the day, they simply turn the machine off, or it will turn off by itself. And all of the information, all of the data, all of that stuff that we mentioned before is situated in the server room. But when it comes to patch management and maintenance and things like that of operating systems, there's only one machine that an IT administrator needs to go to, and that's the server. On the other end of the spectrum, and if we just talk break fix for a moment, you know, should a machine be broken for whatever reason, it's a very simple replacement. So the IT administrator simply just swaps the machine over, and then the machine restarts, and it's once again it's going to go and find all its data and information which is stored in the data center.
It's just a dumb box there, isn't it? Just getting the data and the program and the applications off the server.
We don't like to say dumb because you know, our boxes do have a level of intelligence which will allow a lot of the energy, a lot of the what do you call it, the CPU, you know, graphics processing power to be done locally,
sure.
Which then takes a lot of the draw off the servers, which means you can get more connections per server, if that makes sense.
Okay,
obviously each server's got a finite bunch of connections.
I wasn't aware that you had this product, so that's a great thing that we can start recommending to people now. When they're doing their upgrade, look at this thin client solution from Dell.
Yeah, and of course, you know, the thin client, the bit that people see is the stuff that's on the desk, and a lot of the stuff that doesn't get seen is really in the data center. We're doing some fantastic work, although it's not my area of expertise, around the energy efficient data center, around, you know, virtualization and you know, stepping the power supplies up so they're not running flat out all the time. For example, if the machine's in a low power consumption, like that, it's not being hit up for too much requests over the network, one of the power supplies will actually disable, so it's not drawing any current at all. And of course, it will ramp up when the power is being required again. It's just some sensible things like that that, you know, the power demands meet the, you know, the request from the user base.
It'd be pretty good in a school situation, I imagine, too.
Definitely. You know, it gives the, as I said, the IT administrators the control, you know, so it's very clear that information is being stored on a central device. And, you know, in the education sector, there's obviously, you know, I guess, areas of concern for allowing, you know, I guess, students anywhere up to 15, 16-year-old onto the internet. And, you know, yourself, the internet can be, a troublesome place at times. And being able to control access to certain sites and content being delivered is obviously key in those environments.
Stuart, do you have any case studies of organisations you've worked with that have significantly cut their computing?
Hello?
Are you there? Hello? Are you there, Marty?
Hello, sorry.
Are you there, Stuart?
Marty's dropped off. Are you there, Bruce?
Yeah, I'm here.
I'm here. I was on mute. I apologize.
Sure.
Sorry, something just happened. We'll get another clean break for editing then, Bruce.
It's sort of interesting. My computer went into standby mode, and I'm on VoIP, so maybe that did it. I don't know. But I'm back again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Stuart, the question is, Stuart, you've worked with many companies, I'm sure, to reduce their power consumption from their computing. Can you give us a case study or two?
Certainly. So I guess Parks Victoria is probably one that we've done a lot with. And, of course, they, as you would expect, are in the business of being environmentally aware. So we've done a bunch of work with the team down at Parks Victoria, and are happy to send some of that information through to you. I believe, Marty, correct me if I'm wrong here, we've also done a lot of work with Tourism Australia.
Yep, that's another one.
And
that's
the Tourism Australia
case study.
Was more, yes, exactly, around virtualization and, you know, the data center virtualization, working with those guys on that. And what we're finding more and more is that customers are actually asking questions about, you know, specifically, hey, we have just moved to a six-star building for energy, and we need to know all of the power consumption, all of the energy and things like that. And we haven't had those questions before. We're all ready for them. We have a free online calculator, so folks can go and actually measure their footprint. That's at dell.com/energy, and click on the energy calculator links. And as I said, the engagement from customers these days when you're talking environmental is phenomenal, because everybody wants to know about it. But their first question is, of course, well, how much is this going to cost me? And I think where we're pretty well positioned, being that we're, you know, a direct manufacturer over and above our competitors, is that, well, honestly, it's not going to cost you anything. You're going to refresh your fleet at some stage, whether that's over 3 years or whatever. You're going to have an organic reduction, if you'd like, simply by doing business as usual. If you would then like to tweak it further, once again, it's not going to cost you anymore. You can enable your power management. You can switch your machines off at night. And then you can move to more virtualized environment downstream if it suits your business model. But the good news is, and I think we hear so many bad news stories these days, is that you can bite off little chunks of this environmental discussion and take some really quick practical steps to achieve some goals.
Yes, that's right.
Once you can measure what your consumption is, then you can set yourself a goal for where you would like to be in 12 months, 24 months, 36 months, for example, and then you can work towards it just like any other business KPI.
Yes, and what I find really exciting is particularly with the thin client computing and to a certain extent the notebooks, is that if you wanted to, and the server visualization, if you wanted to, you could, you know, if your equipment's up for a changeover, it's 3 years old, you could virtually halve, perhaps even more than half, your power consumption at no extra cost and get tremendous environmental benefit, save money on your energy bills, have computers that are up to date. It's very hard to do that with many other areas. It's hard to do with lighting, it's hard to do with air conditioning, but with computing, you can do it, and that's exciting, isn't it?
It is, and Dell is very much committed to being the greenest IT organisation on the planet. We kind of believe we are already, but you know, Dell's one of these organisations where you can never ever rest. Having been here 11 years, I've been through the ups and downs of the IT game. This is the next scenario where we're moving into now, and we're going to continue to reduce the footprint of all of our customers, as well as our own corporation's draw.
Yes. Well, Stuart King, thank you very much for coming on this interview. It's been great to interview, and you've got me excited again about the potential for energy saving with computers and your thin client solution. And it's cost effective. It's a great way for companies and businesses to move forward and to respond to the climate change challenge. And it's easy to do, because sometime in the next 3 years, you're probably going to be upgrading your corporate system, IT system, computers, and now you can do that and halve your energy use. So at no cost. Thank you very much, Stuart.
It's almost
a pleasure.
It's almost too good to be true, Bruce. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon.